You're listening to Life Matters. My name's Angela Catterns. Thank you very much for tuning in. How much self-control do you have? Do you overindulge in food, perhaps, or shopping against your better judgment? Daniel Axt has investigated what he sees as the central problem of our time, how we can save ourselves from what we want. He's written the book We Have Met the Enemy, Self-Control in the Age of Excess, and he joins us now. Welcome to Life Matters, Daniel.
Thanks so much.
It's We Have Met the Enemy is the title of your book. Is it ourselves?
You might say so. I think that I want to say that I don't actually think we've lost self-control. I don't think the problem is on the supply side, really. You might say it's more a problem on the demand side. I think that human nature has remained more or less the same, but what's changed is the landscape in which we live, and it's changed mostly in wonderful and very positive ways, but that does create a problem in terms of how we moderate our appetites.
Mm. And you admit that you're not a person of excess. I wonder why you chose to write a book then about people who are.
I'm a person of excessive dullness, perhaps, and temperance. However,
don't say that when you're on the radio.
Full disclosure: I wrote some years ago a novel about a great fat man who became thin as a result of stomach reduction surgery, which I believe is the only such novel in the English language. At that time, that operation was a rare and dangerous thing. In America today, we have more than 220,000 such procedures each year, and so I became more and more aware. As I was asked to write about such matters, there were some problems happening in terms of our appetites. And what I concluded was that, you know, we do have lots of, and we show lots of self-control, but the world has changed. We live in a world, many of us fortunately, of great freedom and affluence, which is a wonderful thing. And technology enables us to do many wonderful things, but it also places great stress on our abilities to rein in our desires.
Yes. The book opens with a really disturbing story about motorized toilets for people who are extremely overweight. I guess that typifies what you're talking about.
Yeah. You know, the problem of obesity is now a global problem. I understand it's a serious problem in Australia. We Americans, of course, like to think we're number one in everything. I think you'll have a hard time surpassing us in this arena. But it seems to be a global problem now, and there are other issues as well. As human freedom increases, which we all hope it will, we're all thrown more upon our own devices in terms of safely comporting ourselves through this challenging landscape.
But here we have a device which you describe, this motorized toilet, which uses technology, to solve the problem rather than the obvious one of self-control.
That's right. A whole industry in America has sprung up around this problem. So there are toilets that will lift 600 or 800-pound people to a standing position, and there are 4-foot-wide operating tables, and there are extra long needles and so forth. And it's kind of shocking that things have come to this with such speed. But it's a challenge that more and more people in the world will face. And as I've said, it's a good challenge because I don't personally want anyone telling me what to do. We all enjoy freedom, but we can get ourselves into a lot of trouble.
You suggest that America has tended to pioneer in all areas of self-gratification. Can you give us a little picture of that?
Well, certainly. I mean, you know, America is a land of there's a certain kind of radical individualism. I mean, the whole premise of the so-called American dream is material in nature. And, you know, everybody expects a better life for themselves and their children at all times. And, you know, humans evolved to live in a landscape of scarcity. And in America, at least, and perhaps in Australia as well, we've created an environment of great plenty. For a small example, 30, 40 years ago, gambling was legal in one state. They had casinos in Nevada, period. Now casinos and or lotteries are legal in 48 states. So I can't argue with that. People perhaps who are grown up should have the right to gamble if they wish, but it does create a need to control your impulses if you might have a problem in this arena.
Yes, well, Daniel, gambling, drug addiction, obesity, alcoholism, they're all examples of what happens when we lose self-control. These are now described as illnesses. Do you think that medicalizing these conditions helps?
Well, it's really a slippery slope because you start out with, say, alcohol or some other substance, and pretty soon you have diseases relating to video games, and I'm addicted to popcorn and so forth. We had a case in New York State where a top official had failed to file his income tax papers for about 5 years, and when this came out, his lawyer said that he suffered from something called non-filer syndrome. And, you know, I think at some level it's kind of dehumanizing if we continue to broaden the realm of compulsory behavior. I think we have to accept that we have a great degree of freedom in our lives.
I'm sorry, non-filer syndrome.
Yeah, I hope it's not contagious.
Well, it sort of is in a way, I think. I think it's something we all suffer from time to time at least. Daniel Axt is our guest at the moment. He's written a book called We Have Met the Enemy, Self-Control in an Age of Excess. Daniel, I suppose the ready access to credit cards makes it pretty easy for us all to spend and buy stuff, doesn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, I think that the financial crisis that we sort of foisted on the world in America is a clear example of the problem I'm talking about, and technology played a crucial role. Credit cards are creatures of technology, creations of technology. There was a time when if you went to a store, all you might have was the money in your pocket. The store might not even be open on a Sunday. You might not be able to get very much home because you didn't drive there. Today, thanks to many wonderful technologies, you can go to a store and enlist thousands of dollars of credit from banks that you've never visited or seen or even heard of, and maybe buy things that you can't afford. And if you ramp that up and talk about bankers and others who made short-term decisions in place of long-term decisions, you get the financial crisis that we had. So technology can be a big problem.
Yes. You talk about self-control, and an important aspect of our being able to control our behavior is whether we can resist the impulse to eat, to indulge ourselves. Tell us about the research done with kids in the early 70s. I think I've heard of it before, the marshmallow test.
Yeah, there's some very famous work done by a psychologist named Walter Mischel, who at Stanford in the 60s got hold of some four-year-olds and observed them through a mirror. And he would say to them, you can have a treat. Here's a piece of candy or a marshmallow or something. But if you can, and I'm going to leave the room, and if you wait till I get back, you'll get a second one. But if you can't wait, ring the bell, and then you'll be allowed to eat it. And then off stage, the children were timed as to how long they were able to wait. He then followed these children for decades across the course of their lives, and he found that those who had been able to wait longest had the best lives in almost every possible way. They were less likely to be arrested. They had better careers. They got along better with people. They scored higher on various tests. They went to better colleges and so on. And, you know, it's absolutely astounding when you see that. And subsequent studies have shown that academic performance for kids is much more strongly predicted by their level of self-discipline than their IQ.
Mm. So if self-control is so important, can it be taught? Why is it not taught to every school child?
I think it can be taught. I think a big part of it is hereditary, but far from all of it. It can be taught, and it's possible one reason we don't emphasize deferring gratification as much as we once did is because the ideology of temptation has changed. You know, there was a time when you were supposed to defer gratification until you were dead. And then we decided that perhaps the afterlife, waiting for the afterlife, was a little too long. And now we've sort of collapsed the time between impulse and gratification. And it's not as fashionable to say, you know, it's better to wait. It's better to save up. It's better to think about the long term. And I think maybe the pendulum is swinging back, particularly in the wake of the financial crisis.
Uh-huh. The ancient Greek philosophers had a bit to say about self-mastery. Tell us how the work of Aristotle anticipated some of the issues that haunt us today, Daniel.
Well, Aristotle really was on the case. I mean, he delineated all this sort of thing, and he talked about the different kinds of failure you had in this area. In particular, he drew a fascinating distinction between two kinds of failures of self-command. There was the one kind, basic weakness, which we all suffer from. I didn't want to smoke, but I smoked a cigarette anyway, and I felt bad and so on. And that's weakness. The other side, the other kind, was of a person who doesn't care what his will is. He just sort of recklessly does and consumes and takes whatever he wants without much concern. And he still has, in Aristotle's view, a failure of self-control. He has no self-control because he hasn't thought about his will. And Aristotle was very tough about what kinds of behavior were compulsory. You know, unless a storm blew your ship off course or something, you were pretty much responsible for your actions, in his view.
You write also that Sigmund Freud is especially interesting because his life and work brings together so many issues to do with this grapple with self-control.
Yeah, he's a fascinating character in this context because, you know, he in some ways he's the architect of modern ideas about desire, and I think he would be appalled to discover the extent to which his ideas have been used to sort of grant license. We use them to grant license to ourselves. I mean, and yet at the same time, he killed himself with his smoking habit. But it's an interesting question as to whether he had a self-control problem because I think he understood early on that his smoking was harmful, and yet he embraced it and depended upon it and loved it. And so I think Freud himself led a life of tremendous self-regulation. He lived according to the clock. He was tremendously productive in his work, and he was restrained in his sexual impulses as far as we know. And so it's ironic indeed that his ideas, many of which were quite wacky, nonetheless have led not so much to autonomy as license.
So, Daniel, where's it all going to end? You know, do you think humankind will ever conquer the problem of self-control? Do we need more external limits from governments, for example, more of the nanny state, as we call it here?
Well, that's a great question, and I don't think it's going to end in the near future because I hope and I think we're going to get freer and freer. Drugs perhaps will become more legal in more countries. So it's a problem that's been with us and will continue to be with us, and I think the answer is simply to recognize that it exists and to understand that you can't conquer it through sheer willpower. If you want to control your appetites, you have to control your environment and eliminate some of these problems, you know. I think technology ultimately may provide some answers just as it has provided problems. For example, right now we've cut the rate of heart attack deaths through statin drugs. And so just as technology has helped make us fatter, it's also wiped out some of the consequences of that problem.
Mm. Well, also there's the idea of pre-commitment, isn't it? I find that interesting. There's a website that you can go to and sort of promise, you know, make a promise to a particular outcome and then pay a kind of penalty if you don't meet the promise.
Absolutely. When I say control your environment, I mean control the circumstances in which your desires are enacted. And there's a website, for example, called stick.com, and that's stick with two Ks at the end. And you can make a legally binding contract there whereby you give them some money on a credit card and you agree to, say, stop smoking or to write your novel or whatever it is, and you can even appoint a referee. And if you fail, they give your money to a charity or even to what they might call an anti-charity, so that if you're an ardent liberal, they might give your money to the George W. Bush Memorial Library. And that can be a very powerful incentive or disincentive for people. And so this goes back to Odysseus, who had his men tie him to the mast when they were coming to the Sirens, so that when he changed his mind and said, set me free, he couldn't get loose.
It's very, very interesting. Thank you so much for joining us today. It's been a pleasure to talk to you.
The pleasure's been mine.
Thank you. Daniel Axt, he's the author of We Have Met the Enemy, Self-Control in the Age of Excess. His book is published by Scribe, and we'll put all the details on our website. If you've got a comment to make, you can go there and make it. We'd love to hear from you. It's abc.net.au/rn/lifematters, or you can also call our listener line and leave a message with your own voice. That's 02-833-1430. I hope you'll stay tuned to Life Matters. Coming up, we'll meet a Life Matters listener. All four generations of her family stay in touch with each other via Facebook. But next, raising awareness of Indigenous rights with the Freedom Riders of 2011.